This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We are going to go for the next 3 hours and try to do our best to get you up to speed with everything going on in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And while we do that, we will continue to stream live on the ESPN app. You've got us on SiriusXM 371 as well. I'm Mark Packer. My partner would be Wes Durham. And again, we got the dogs, we got cats, we got games, we got highlights, we got buzzer beaters, we got all kinds of stuff going on. Wes, how are you?
I'm great, Pack. We got great guests too. Lars Tiffany will be here, Virginia's lacrosse coach in this first hour. Hour two today, Sean McDonough, who will be part of the tournament broadcast crew later today from the Coliseum in Greensboro, will join us. And then in the final hour, Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga on game day. Wait till he hears what our record is with game day coaches, right?
True. Almost as good as his record in the first round of the ACC tournament. Almost
wow.
as good.
No kidding, huh?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, big win. Miami started it off yesterday. You know what? I thought we had three different sample sizes of ball games at the end of the day last night.
Yep. That's right. If you want a blowout, got you covered. You want a crazy comeback game winner, got you covered. We want a close game, hey, three minutes ago, not sure who's going to win. Got you covered. Really, you're right.
Yep.
Three different boxes all checked yesterday.
Yeah. Let's get started with last night first, shall we? Because that was the best one. That was the thriller. That was the comeback. That was the game winner. Boy, this is why yesterday at the end of the show I took Wake Forest. I just felt like the scrappy Deeks would show up in Greensboro. They'd play with a little bit of urgency. They would also – they're not going to mail it in. Steve Forbes has taken the mail it in concept. And for the most part, it's not been a part of Wake's culture this year. Now, there have been a couple times where you wondered, you know, just how long the season was gotten and how young and maybe a little bit of inexperience and that kind of thing. But the Deacons came flying out on the floor last night in Greensboro. But then in the final 8 minutes of the ball game, Pack, Notre Dame on us. They went March. They went tournament in Greensboro on us, I guess.
That is exactly why I did pick Notre Dame in this game, because I thought Wake would be close with about 7 minutes to go. Listen, they're learning how to win, right? And you got to go through some of these tough times to understand what it takes to close the deal inside 5 minutes, inside 10 minutes. Wake, for the most part, other than about a two-week stretch near the end of the season, played everybody tough. Right, I mean, it'd be 7-8 minutes ago, yeah. And you're like, man, the poor Deeks, man, they're going to win this game. But last night, listen, this is going to be one that they will look back and go, we should have won this game. You know, we're up 16 in the second half with 16 minutes to go. We're controlling everything about this game. We're up 10 inside 8 minutes. Got to close the deal. And, hey, you tip your hat to Notre Dame now. 17-2 run, had to win. You had to make a run. They did. They got the lead.
Yep.
And they make a defensive play to get the ball back with 6 seconds. Here's the play.
Got
block,
it.
Release. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Villanova North Carolina National Championship game, right? Hey, trail.
Yep.
Throw it behind me. Wide open, same side of the wing. Bam. And Wirtz makes a 30-footer, and that is good. As he said last night after the game, felt good when I left my hand. I knew it was in. But this was a gutsy win for Notre Dame. And for Wake Forest, brutal way to end the year. But I'll say it again. I like what Steve Forbes is doing in Winston-Salem. This is part of the learning process, right? Of figuring out what do we have to do to get over the hump. We're competitive enough. We got to get a couple few more, you know, obviously a little better talent. That's going to be coming into play with Steve. And the ability to learn how to win and close games. That is all part of the process.
That's right.
And but a very entertaining game. It was fun to watch.
Oh. Well, and, you know, the thing about it is that Notre Dame gets that run going, and it kind of – the offense is one piece of it, but, Pack, they were pretty salty on defense in the last 9-10 minutes of that ball game. That's the part – we haven't talked about the Irish locking people down much, right? I mean, let's be honest. Notre Dame guarded folks, and that was one of the things that caught my eye in the comeback last night was – you know, they were getting stops and back-to-back-to-back stops, which is what coaches are always looking for, three in a row. And, you know, good for them. Wake missed shots, some hard, difficult, contested shots, others open shots for Coach Forbes' team. But a final note on Wake on this, I was really impressed with the attitude, the approach. I mean, look, opening season, roster kind of in transition, right? And then all of a sudden they get shut down for 30-some days, right? Lose a player for 75 and Ian DuBose. He comes back, contributes at the end. Boy, he hit a long three last night. They've got good young players. You could see the growth of Masoud, Musius, players like that. I would be, if I were waking up this morning, yes, I'd be disappointed the way the game ended last night. No question. But, man, would I be encouraged about where I am with Steve Forbes as my basketball coach in Winston-Salem.
I don't think you're going to see Wake Forest in the 14 spot in the ACC tournament next couple of years. I just don't. I think that they will be a team that will progressively get better under Coach Forbes. I thought they got better as this year went on, even though after the Florida State game, they, like I said, they had about a two-week stretch where they looked like they had just kind of tapped out for a little bit and just gotten obliterated. But they played hard last night, and I just think that they'll wake up today ticked off, like you said, because that's like, man, how we let that thing get away from us? And how crazy has Notre Dame been this year with big lead games, right? We talked about the 17-point lead at Georgia Tech in the second half, lost it, 20-point lead at Syracuse in the second half, lost it, jumped all over Florida State. And I kept thinking about that Florida State game Saturday last night was, I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is the same team that I just watched play their last game, really just kind of push Florida State around on both ends of the floor and kind of totally dominated the game. And they're getting absolutely used by Wake Forest. I mean, it just goes to show you what college hoops is on any given night, right? If one team you fall in love with one day, next time you see him play, you go, I don't even know who these guys are. And Notre Dame kind of gave you that from half to half last night. I mean, there really was a stretch for the first 25 minutes of that game versus the last 15. It didn't look like the same team, but it all started with defense. And like you said, you think of Notre Dame making threes in offense and spreading around, but it all started by making some stops consecutively. It's the only way you can go on a 14-0 run to go from double digits down to take a two-point lead. It was a fun, entertaining game.
Yeah, no question about it. And let's hear from the victorious coach, Mike Bray.
What we do in the ACC tournament is kind of amazing, quite frankly, for somebody who's been in here 8 years. That's 11 tournament game wins in 8 years. That probably shouldn't happen for a newcomer. And if you look at the records of people through the years, even some of the original members, you know, it's, but I think we kind of feel we should play well in this thing and especially in this building, because I think that's 5-1 in this building now. And it's a great win for us, no matter who you play. I mean, any way you can get to the next round in a tournament atmosphere, which we have shown, if you can win the first one, which we've done many times in the ACC, it just kind of gives you hope.
By the way, he has got all the history checked out.
He does.
He's exactly right. That's 5 wins in 6 games in Greensboro. Notre Dame is now 11-5 in the tournament in their history, which is pretty strong. And they are 8-4 since Steve Vastoria's jump shot won the ACC tournament for them back in 2015 against Carolina.
All that is correct. I was just going to say, if there's a way to get a screenshot of Mike Bray there, I swear to God, for a second, I thought I was watching Jack Nicholson in The Shining. For a second, for a brief, I closed my eyes for a second. I said, is that Jack Nicholson in The Shining? Seriously. It's Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Lloyd.
Yeah.
I've always liked you, Lloyd.
but not only is Coach Bray 1,000% right with what he just said, and he mentioned 5-1 in Greensboro. It's not only 5-1, it's also 5 straight in Greensboro. Now, they lost the first in Greensboro. They've won 5 in a row in that house in the ACC tournament since. But that was one last night that I guarantee he slept good last night, because there was a long period last night in that game. He's thinking, yeah, where did we go wrong with this group? But they never lost faith, but it all started with defense, though, Wes. That was the key for an offensive-minded team. They won it because their defense took it to another level.
By the way, Duke's in Greensboro. And, boy, they leave a mark yesterday. Most of it scoring. The Blue Devils post an 86-51 win over Boston College yesterday, the second largest margin of victory in ACC tournament. It's actually tied for fourth. Duke's second largest margin of victory, or largest margin in the ACC tournament. They beat Virginia by 37 in 1999. In tournament history, it's in the top five of margins. Blue Devils 18-2 in their first game of the last 20 tournaments. There you see the 99 Virginia game, the 1961 game. Something about Virginia and Duke brings out the best in the Blue Devils. We'll throw BC in there, and Duke did it from behind the line. Blue Devils were 15 of 32 from three. And, oh, by the way, shot 52.5% from the floor. Pack, shoot like that, they'll be staying a while.
Well, that's it. And we're going to give you all the offensive numbers. I'm going to go the other way with you. You know what? Just like we talked about with Notre Dame. Same team I watched Saturday is getting absolutely woodshedded by Wake Forest in the first round of the ACC tournament. That Duke team that I watched on Saturday couldn't defend me.
Yeah.
All right, they gave up 90-something again. Well, yesterday they gave up 51. I'm telling you, everybody talks offense, offense, offense. The difference is shutting people down. And when you hold somebody to 51, I like your chances. I just do. I don't care what, if it's a rec league, it's the ACC tournament, the NBA, you pick it.
Yep.
You hold somebody to 51, I like your chances. And on top of that, you're going to give me Duke's going to make the perimeter shots, which they didn't do Saturday night. You're right. That team can cause a problem when they defend and make shots. And Duke can make a deep, deep run with that combination.
Yep. No, I'm with you on that. And DJ Stewart in his first ACC tournament game, 17 points. Mark Williams, 13 points. Blue Devils today draw Louisville. That is clearly of the four on the card, the most interesting one in the second round. We will.
Wait a minute. Now, that's on your opinion. I think the first game of the day, to me, is the one that grabs my attention. But we'll get to that. I think NC State Syracuse is the one that has some real juice to it, in my opinion. But we'll talk about
it. Okay. All right. Okay. So the Blue Devils are winners. They play Louisville. You know how the regular season went. We'll talk about that later. That comes up at 6:30 tonight. All games today, by the way, right here on the big ACCN. We got it for you.
Every stinking one of them. All four.
Every stinking right one here. Of them, yeah. All right, let's get to the third and final game of yesterday. Miami beat Pitt 79-73, and this is the one Packer was telling you with 3 minutes left to go, you didn't know who was going to win.
Nope.
Packer used the word amazing yesterday. He said this game would be amazing.
And it was.
It was close. It was close to amazing. It was.
Tell you what, Mr. Wong. Mr. Wong is amazing. That dude's a baller. Now he can play for anybody in the league.
Yep. He's talented, and yesterday Miami put five in double figures. I thought that the contribution they got from Nasir Brooks, in addition to what Isaiah Wong, I thought would do, really made a difference in the ball game. Justin Champagne, 11 points on 5 of 20. Now, Pack, we have had the discussion about getting shots. He got them yesterday.
Didn't make it.
Miami did a nice job defending him and making him tough. Now, he had some open looks, but they really did a good job staying with him.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, it's funny. Wake Forest ends their season. They lose a game on a 17-2 run, and Pitt ends their season yesterday. And as Wes, call me crazy. Doesn't it feel those two teams feel different? I mean, Pitt, the way Pitt's season just kind of unraveled with Johnson and Tony's departure – and, you know, Capel getting the reprimand the other day about the unfair, unbalanced, and he getting his team went to the free throw line more than anybody else in the league. And I don't know. Pitt was a weird one to figure this year. And I'm not sure where they are. You know, Pitt season ends, and it's kind of like, where are they? I don't really know what to make of Pitt basketball right now. I really don't.
I think we're going to have to see, and I know what – Jeff Capel's talked about from a culture and a foundation standpoint and an investment in the program, and it's gone okay in the first 3 years. The personnel moves at the end, and we talk about the transactive nature of the sport, right? Where, you know, kids on the team Monday and Wednesday's in the portal. You know, the move of Johnson and Tony aside, Do you see young guys that can help? Yes and no. You see young guys that can certainly be developed. I think they're going to be a candidate for the grad transfer. I certainly think they're going to be a candidate for the portal. But the stability is, I think, what we're talking about. Do we see that step-by-step continuity? And that's one of the things I'm sure that'll be a challenge for Pittsburgh going forward in this year. And that's the toughest part. And sometimes it happens at different times with programs.
Right. Because, you know, if you would have asked me that question in early January, I would have told you, man, I kind of like this. Mm-hmm. I was really buying in to what Pitt was doing. It's kind of like their football season. It kind of reminded me of their football season. That I loved what I saw early, and then, you know, Paris Ford leaves, and they just kind of, you know, lose the NC State game in football, and they just kind of lost their way for a while, and then you just kind of at the end of the year, you weren't sure. Hey, they got good players, but they just didn't win enough games, and I kind of felt the same way with Pitt basketball. I liked them early, and all of a sudden, Tony's gone, Johnson's gone, Champagne was kind of weird in the tournament yesterday, and the season ends, and you know, you just kind of go, you know, kind of where are we? It's kind of hard to define them right now, Pitt basketball. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
There's the schedule today. All the games on ACC Network starting at noon. Syracuse and NC State back looking right at you.
That's a good one.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. Yeah. Let me tell you, you get your little Portillo's Italian beef sandwich, sit down with the dogs and watch that one. Just tell you that right now, Wes. That's a Commissioner Jim Phillips round two of Portillo's with the Hounds at high noon is what I'm talking about. You'll talk Duke Louisville and I get all that. Notre Dame, I get all the games, but to me, the first one is the one with the juice, in my opinion, because that one's got implications. You know, Louisville, I think, is still in a good spot. Duke, we know they got to win them all. I get all that, but Syracuse must win. Must win. And NC State, balling. Yeah. Five straight. Wolfpack completely comfortable away from Raleigh, NC, where they've won four in a row from that perspective. Syracuse has beaten these dudes twice. NC State probably looking at those games going, man, we had both of them. We should have won both of them. Ended up losing both of them. Man, this game feels right. First game out of the block, and you know it. State playing with hair on the fire. Listen, they got nothing to lose. Nothing to lose. And Syracuse has everything to lose. I mean, they're a total... They are the poster child for Bubbalicious, right? They are right there. Good. Tilting to the good. Tilt to the bad. They have to win this game. I think this is the best game of the day. The very first one. That's what I think.
Your friends at BPI.
Yeah, what do they want?
Like Syracuse. Syracuse, 51.9%.
It is a flip game thing. I mean, I know we got to make our picks later. I still am not sure which way I'm going on this. I mean, seriously, this would be an NC State fan could call up and say, Pack, we're going to win because of A, B, C, and D. I'd go, yeah, you're probably right. Syracuse fan call up right behind, Pack, we're going to win because of A, B, C. Yeah, you're probably right. This is hey, roll it out there, man. This is why you grab your popcorn, Mike Young style, and put your feet up because I think this is the best game of the day. I really do. This one's got it, man.
I had the privilege of doing both these games in the regular season. Orange won 76-73 at the Dome, second half comeback. NC State led by 9 at the break.
Right.
And then Syracuse kind of made it comfortable in Raleigh, 77-68. I will say this. I think that, you know, the old adage, how many times have you heard, it's really hard to beat a team three times.
That's nonsense.
It's really hard.
That is total nonsense. That's one of the worst sports analogies ever. Hey, if I could beat you twice, you think I'm worried about beating you three times? If I've beaten you twice, you're the one with the problem going, I don't know if we can beat these guys. I've never understood that.
Though, stakes are a little higher this year. Stakes are a little higher this year, Captain.
And I tell you what, Kevin Keats is thrilled to death that you're in Cartersville, Georgia at noon today. That I guarantee you.
and not doing the game.
I guarantee if Kevin Keats is watching us this morning, he's like, thank God. I love Wes. He's my bud. But, man, thank God he's not in the building today. Because we haven't beaten Syracuse yet with Wes Durham. That's what he's thinking.
Yeah, well, there you have it. Got that.
This is a tough game to pick.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is a tough one.
Ooh.
I love that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Let's see where this falls. I will say that let's move on to the 2:30 game, and then we'll come back to the noon game, right?
Okay, sure.
The 2:30 game is Miami at Clemson. Miami and Clemson, 2:30. BPI says Tigers 85.3%.
Wow, that's a big number.
Clemson won a tight fit at Coral Gables and then hit threes from all over the building to beat Miami at Tigertown.
Yeah, but you know what? They had to pull it. Miami played Clemson tough in Tigertown. Both these games were close. And the thing that concerns me about Miami, we'll have Jim Larranaga on later in the show, is, they only have a handful of guys. You just played last night. I do worry about stamina because of the lack of depth. They're going to have to figure that out as they go along, and that's an advantage for Clemson in this game, who plays a bunch of dudes. So that is a major swing towards Clemson in this game. But Miami can ball now, I'm telling you. Isaiah Wong can go off on anybody. But the first game, though, the first one's the one that's got me hooked. The first one's a great one.
Yeah. By the way, congratulations to Amir Sims. He is the winner of the Skip Prosser Award as the top academic performer in men's basketball in the ACC. Well done, top scholar athlete. Our congratulations to Amir. Oh, great kid.
Yep.
All right, very quickly, the game of the night for me is at 6:30, and that's Duke and Louisville. Blue Devils come out. Looked like the Showtime Lakers yesterday, knocking down threes, maybe more like Golden State than the Lakers. 15 of 32 from three. DJ Stewart settled in. Mark Williams got what he wanted at the rim. Now, all of a sudden, here's Carlique Jones after an 8-point game last Saturday against Virginia in his first ACC tournament game. You know about how the overtime contest went at Cameron. I'm going to be really, really interested to see the Ville today, Pac. Really interested.
I tell you what intrigues me is that Carlique Jones had a very unlike performance in his last one. Matthew Hurt, the last couple games, has been out of character as well, based on what we saw for a long period of time. We just talked about Justin Champagny, had kind of an off day yesterday. These are all the guys we talked about as far as ACC Player of the Year, that the last time you saw him play, you just kind of went, I've seen better. So you worry sometimes about, are we in a slump or are we ready to see, watch out, here they come. And Carlique Jones can do that, and so can Matthew Hurt. So big-time game, though, 6:30 tonight. Again, another one. I'll be on the couch, popcorn in hand, and maybe even maybe an ice cube for that one. It could be an ice cube game.
There you go.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Business is picking up in the Gate City. We got you covered for not one, not two, not three, four ACC tournament games today on the network. But right now, we're going lacrosse. And our buddy Lars Tiffany's back from the University of Virginia. Last time we had him on, it wasn't a Lars problem. It was an hour problem. We were all over the place with technical issues.
On the grid.
Not today. Not today, because we have brought out the defender right here. Right there. That's it. We brought out the defender.
Oh, yeah. Put it on.
We're letting it rip. All right, Lars, let's go. We got the Tar Heels coming to town Thursday. This is a big deal. Number one's coming to town.
It is a big deal. Boy, and we'd be more intimidating if you came out of our locker room first looking like that.
You better believe
it. Look at that look, Wes.
I tell you what.
How about that?
Hey, you give me a stick and let me get a head start with an ice cube, and I'll wear some people out now. I would be a problem with my one good knee.
I think we'd be manned down a lot.
Let me just tell you. You'd be in real trouble. Let me tell you something. Nobody. The only thing he could possibly do is guard the cage, and that would only be as long as somebody else promised not to move. Because if he has to move, it's not going to end well.
Let me ask you something, Lars. Is it a traditional stance to be leaning up against the goalie net like this with a cocktail in your hand? would that work? Would we have a big enough lead for me to pull that off?
Probably not. And you can't turn. You can't turn when the shot comes. You got to stand there.
I'm not. Hey, I'm going to have my dog with me. Chester and Fuller are going to be sound asleep in front of the net.
All right, let's get to the dynamics of of the season here, because you guys are off and running. You're playing big games. This is not what you didn't even get to this last year. Now you're already into it. Kind of what's that mean? I mean, how is this team reacting to kind of being back on form, being back on, you know, kind of a routine of playing these dynamic games? And here comes one Thursday night with Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, what a gift. How grateful we are that the ACC and the University of Virginia, Carla Williams, found a way to get us back on the field and to compete. And this is absolutely the most important thing to an athlete's life, is the opportunity to play big games. You come to the University of Virginia to take on ACC opponents, to pursue the ACC and national title games. And this game tomorrow night, right here at Klöckner Stadium, the best venue in the country, this is what it's all about. So we couldn't be happier and more excited. I almost feel like I've got to tone it down a little bit of practice, you know, make sure we still have as much energy, because we're going to have to be hyper aware. These Tar Heels are playing super fast. I've never seen them play so fast. And obviously that's our style too. So it's going to be run and gun in the sun.
Coach, you know, we have talked to a couple players in the league already, and I've asked the same question. I'm going to ask you the same question. Is it possible that winning the ACC may be more difficult than winning the national championship, given how good the league is with so many teams?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly have an argument. I mean, look at Tony Bennett. What has he done is simply incredible. I mean, the last five of the last 9 years, he's won the regular season ACC championship in men's basketball. To me, that's incredible. So I look at it in basketball, and it might be harder to do it in basketball. You know, lacrosse, we do have, you know, some of the premier teams, all five teams in ACC men's lacrosse, legitimately compete for a national championship. And so, yeah, winning the ACC regular season title is a huge deal, and it's a big deal. And tomorrow night with the Tar Heels is a big step for both of us, you know, and really critical to earning that.
We get into the idea of Carolina, Virginia, and there's a little bit of history here, right? I mean, these two have kind of battled back and forth for years and years and years. Take us through kind of where you got with a couple of guys. One is Charlie Bertrand. Pack and I are fascinated by this guy coming in and now just making the contributions in such a big way for you guys as well.
Yeah, Charlie's been fantastic for us. We already had a lot of talent here, so we only went to the transfer portal this past summer for one man, and we wanted to make sure it was the right man, and Charlie Bertrand is that man. Division II Player of the Year twice. I got to sneak this in there. How about we played High Point last week? It's Charlie Bertrand, Division II Player of the Year, versus High Point's Kevin Rogers, who was the Division III Player of the Year year earlier. That's the – how about this? I'll sneak this in. First time since dirt that's ever happened. Huh?
I love it.
Charlie Bertrand, he's in a force. He's a powerful man, and we're really lucky to have him. And off the field, it's incredible what that guy does. Mechanical engineering, now he's getting an MS in commerce. His organization, he and his mother work with Beads of Courage, Maureen's Hope. It's unbelievable what Charlie Bertrand is as an athlete and as a man.
Coach, you mentioned both teams like to get up and down the field. You know, we hear styles make fights and all that stuff. When you know you want to play at 100 miles an hour and you're going to play a team that wants to go 100 miles an hour, do you have to do anything different in terms of the mindset? Because it could be a game, quite frankly, a match, that all of a sudden you're up 6-1. You know, and hey, it's not over, because you know it's got to be pedal to the metal. Let's go. We're going to go 100 miles an hour for the entire game, because these teams can both score in bunches. Does the mindset change from a coaching perspective heading into a game like that, that you just know that, you know what, we could have a bunch of points scored here?
Exactly. And the real challenge is, I think both head coaches are defensive-orientated people. Joe Bresci was a fantastic defensive himself, and he's a very good defensive coach, and that's the end of the field I stay on. So, you know, you sort of swallow your old pride and ego, you know, and saying, hey, I'm not going to worry about the goals allowed average today.
Right.
But it's again, it's a player's game. And this is the way the game that I learned it from the Native Americans, from the Onondaga people of the Iroquois. You know, it's a game that was to develop, to build men, develop warriors. And that's not by playing slow. It's about competing and going full speed and building men. So it's what we want to do. I know it's what the Tar Heels are doing this year. And but you're right. We could be up by five or down by five in the first quarter. And just like, hey, steady the nerves, fellas. Steady the nerve. This is what this game is going to be about. It's going to be punch, counterpunch, big blow. Here we go.
I love it.
Hey, Lars, the one thing that's always struck me about you and your program is that it's more than just the games. I mean, it's about building a lot of things philosophically, some cases spiritually. You talk about the books and things like that you guys go through from time to time, and I think that's big. But your impact in the community in Charlottesville has been pretty significant as well. And you guys are doing stuff with wood now. You're delivering wood and chopping wood to to help folks in Charlottesville and in the outlying areas.
Isn't it great? I think I finally found my calling for community outreach and service. We've done a bunch of different things here, but I found one where you can have a chainsaw in your hand. And what could be better than that? Kelly Metcalf, her and her husband started an organization called Start a Spark. And what they do, they're a tree service company, but with the excess wood, they bring out volunteers to chop it up, split it, stack it, and deliver it. And we started doing this in November because our normal community service projects were limited because of the COVID protocol. And so Brian Wilberger, our director of ops, found this one like, hey, this is outside. This is perfect. And so we've been going over there a bunch, and we're actually going back Saturday. And so Kelly gets us all organized, and we get the wood chippers. We got splitters. We've got chainsaws. What could be better than that?
Let me tell you something. You are not only are you spot on because it's for a great benefit, which is the most important thing. But you get outdoors. And the other day, this is no lie, we've got one of these like 25-foot tree trimmer things. It's one of those extending things. Once you get started, you cannot stop. It becomes addicting because now you're looking for every branch and twig and whatever that you just want to cut, knock down. And but when you get the chainsaw going, man, it's lights out. You just want to clear an entire field. So you're it's like pressure washing. Same thing. You get the dang, that freaking pressure washer. You start wanting to do the whole neighborhood, right? You get yours knocked out. You're like, let me go take care of my neighbors. You knock the whole thing out. So you are absolutely 100% right. 100% right.
And it's just right. And Kelly Metcalf, she connects with people in the community who rely on wood for heat, that may not have a furnace, an oil burner. And this is all they can do for heat, and they just don't have access to it because of their family situation. So it's one of the most wonderful feelings getting to some of these houses and delivering this wood. And so it's fantastic. But I'm with you. If you have any trees, you know, I there's a certain dimension. My saw is only about 20 inch. So, you know, I can get up to about 22, 25 inch diameter.
Here's what I'm worried about, Lars. Yesterday we had Dan Bonner on the show about this time. And Dan had on his Elks Lodge, flannel, and he was ready to go. And he was getting to go out into the woods and cut down a bunch of trees. I'm worried between Bonner on one part of the state and you on the other part of the state in Charlottesville, you may just clear out the entire Commonwealth because I know how both of you operate. That's what worries me.
Oh, well, don't worry about me because I'm a vegetarian. I'm a conservationist at heart. So I'm just thinning the forest a little bit, trying to find the ones that are blocking the canopy for the smaller ones. So I'm not about clear cutting.
I got you.
We're going to maintain habitats for the species of Virginia.
Before we let you go, and we've always enjoyed what you're reading and what you've got your guys reading. Wes mentioned it a second ago. Just enlighten us about what's the latest in terms of your books or theories and all that stuff.
Sure. The latest has been, we're not the first to do this, borrow this from others. We've been doing a Triple H. Each man, a couple minutes in front of everyone, talks about his hero, his hardships and his highlights in his life, the Triple H. And we're still doing Bob Rotella's book, How Champions Think. Fabulous sports psychologist. Yeah. Actually lives here locally. But the Triple H, I found that this has been more so important during COVID, where it allows us to express ourselves. And we're sort of missing those emotional moments, those times together, as much as we normally have. And so the Triple H, sharing who your hero is and why. And a lot of people are saying their moms, amongst others. And then the hardships they've had in their lives, their highlights, really giving them themselves and making themselves a little more vulnerable. And it's much more impactful and I think much more meaningful during this time where we just don't get that much social time. You know, I find myself at practice. You know, you go out there and coach, there's a pre-practice, you get there about 10 minutes early, and you want to see the guys hustling and working and shooting. And this year, I'm okay with, you know, the fact that three or four of them are talking, you know, and having a slow catch, because I realize that this is the time to socialize, that they don't have it outside of this magical opportunity of practice. So it's finding those opportunities. So the Triple H has been what we've been focusing on right now. And it's been really, really impactful.
Very cool. Listen, man, we always love touching base with you, man. You are always a fun interview. We always learn something. And again, the give back to the community is incredibly great. And that's just awesome. That's what life's all about.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Wes. It's a wonderful opportunity. Right. I get an opportunity here to coach men and try to give them the great opportunity to know that they can make a difference on others and the rest of their lives.
Awesome.
And next time, we're not going to worry about Pac playing goalie, Lars. We're going to make sure that Pac gets up early enough so he can go work out with you and the orthopedic guy, right? We're going to get that done.
Yeah,
we're going to get
Pac
in the workout deal.
No, listen, Doc is...
Brockmeyer, he's out there.
I might need a good orthopedic doctor. The way I've been operating here I got one good knee. I might need his help. But we need to get some chainsaws, man. That sounds like a good afternoon to me. Jump on the chainsaws and let it rip.
Are you a steel? You got your steel or a Husqvarna?
I don't have anything. I'm a rental.
Okay.
You know why? And I can tell you why.
I am.
And I'll tell you why. Because my wife has the basement. I mean, well, I got the basement here for the studio. The other side of the basement is now turned into the, as I call it, the little person upholstery club. She's not getting into upholstery. So she and her best friend, Joanna, right now, have just taken my Ford F-150 to go up to Hickory, North Carolina to buy old furniture. And they're going to bring it all back. And so she's now into upholstery. So the reason there's no chainsaws in the house is because we need room for the upholstery business that we're getting ready to open up. That's how we roll.
There we go. That's how we roll.
True story.
Thanks, Lars. Good luck on Thursday night. We look forward to following Virginia. They're part of our big doubleheader on the network. Take care, my man. Be well.
Yeah, thank you, Vess. Thank you, Mark. You guys do a fantastic job. It's always great to be on the show.
Thank you.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Before we start talking about the great moments for every ACC team and more guests, we'll take a call or two. Let's go here to the great state of North Carolina, where I am situated. Tremaine is up next. Tremaine, how are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
Well, man, not as good as
Fabulous.
You. Big old TV star, commercial highlighter.
Tremaine,
we caught your act.
Come on.
I'm just trying to get on y'all's level. I wake up every morning and I look in the mirror and I'm like, how can I be more like Wes and Pack?
No,
that's not a good
No.
You need your goals.
You already eclipsed all that. Yeah you're doing fine. What's going on?
Let me tell you something. Your commercial check's a lot bigger than ours. It's the other way around,
that's
my man.
That's exactly right. There we go.
Bingo.
I promise you that. Yeah.
Working Bingo. On it. I wanted to pluck you guys' brain, kind of like shift just a little bit on the topic of recruiting. And for time, I'll just condense the story. So I was actually out filming and got to meet up with one of my friends. And her boyfriend is actually an NBA scout. And so he and I were talking.
Okay.
And I was kind of like finding out how he views things when they're scouting and all that. We started talking about high school recruits, and I brought up the name Trevor Keels, who's like a 5-star, really good, phenomenal big man guard. And before I could say anything, and literally before he even knew I was a UVA fan, he said, if anybody around this kid knows basketball, they would talk to him about going to UVA. And he was building it around the fact that, like, he's seen his game and he just feels like his game is structured for something that Tony Bennett could really mold and make this guy an elite player. He talked about that Tony could turn him into like next Klay Thompson or Joe Harris. And it was no shade towards the other coaches that were recruiting him. It was just he said that like with this young man's style of play that Tony Bennett would be the perfect marriage for him to like really turn him into an elite player. And later on in the conversation, you know, long story short, we were talking about Isaac Trout, Austin Nunez, Bobby, some players that UVA is looking at. And he was talking about, like, you know, Tony has really struck players that, you know, for probably the fifth time in his NBA career, his scouting career, he could say, like, all players that he's recruiting, those top four, should look at UVA. And long story short, it tied into this conversation of how some high school recruits miss the mark because they pursue logos instead of places where would be a really good fit. And just to give you an interesting stat, I saw the other day, the last 32 players at UVA that either stayed or, you know, did their time and it went to the NBA draft, all 32 that under UVA and Tony Bennett, all 32 of them are either ACC champs, tournament champs, or national champs. And so that speaks volumes to players who go with a coach that's their fit versus like chasing a logo. And so do you think that we live in a generation with recruits that are more focused on the logo on their chest rather than the coach that could really push them to that next level?
Tremaine, I think it's different for every player. I think that
I do too.
That everybody's story is different. Everybody's path is different. There may be some folks that go, hey, listen, I got to get to the league ASAP. And so what's the quickest way? Is it a cup of coffee in Durham, or am I going to Lexington, Kentucky? Or hey, do I want to really enjoy a true four-year college experience? Not that you can't get it at Kentucky or Duke, but for the most part, the way teams are built, and you hear it all the time with coaches, hey, we're trying to figure out a way to stay old, right? You hear that all the time now. And Tony Bennett, again, I think the graph that we put up yesterday over this last 10 or 11 years of the four great programs right now in the conference, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida State, the graphic of like NBA draft picks is varied. It's across the board in terms of the numbers at Duke versus Virginia versus North Carolina versus Florida State. So there's a number of different ways to have success and to build. Coach K's proven you can win with one and dones. Tony Bennett's proven you can win with, you know, juniors and seniors. So I don't think one answer fits the mold for every high school player coming out. And the desires and needs for the respective families and you know, the economic standpoint and what you want to get out of a college experience, I think every player coming out of high school might answer that question completely, totally different. So it's not necessarily the brand or the logo. It's what do you want to get out of that experience? Is the NBA the ultimate end-all here? I mean, I think it's different for everybody.
Yeah, I think when you you start looking at schools, it's interesting. Here's the graphic from that we ran the other day, Tremaine, from 2010 to 2011 and forward. Here's the overall record at Virginia, the overall record at Duke, Carolina, Florida State. Okay, and this is where Seth Greenberg was going the other day, I think, when he was talking about brands, right, Pac? Okay, yeah. You see lottery picks, NBA picks, and first-round picks. Yeah, Duke's got numbers, okay? But that's the course they've chosen to go. Carolina occasionally goes that way. By the way, in those six at Florida State, Fiondu Cabangeli was somebody that was developed by Leonard Hamilton. Virginia had first-round picks developed. DeAndre Hunter developed and redshirted under Tony Bennett. It's two different tracks. And I'll say this because I know we're up against it for Sean McDonough here in just a minute. To me, and knowing the way college basketball works, which is entirely different than college football, okay? For college basketball, it's a much more personal decision. And the critical nature of the decision sometimes has to be based on a variety of things. But here's the one thing I would always, and I would say this to a high school kid today, get honest opinions. Don't go with what you want to hear. Go with what you need to hear. when it comes in this process. Because I don't disagree with you. I think some people have to look for that fit. And it's not about maybe what the romance is going to be. It's about what the fit needs to be for you as the player. And sometimes those decisions get a little skewed. Not always, sometimes. And I think that's what we're talking about here as it relates to certain kids in certain ways. And look, Tony Bennett's made no secret about it. Getting old is critical at Virginia Pack. And this team this year, they got a little age to them. Not as old as Georgia Tech, but they got a little age to them. So, good stuff. Thanks, Tremaine. Look forward to seeing you on the screen.
Yep.
Making that commercial money.
That's it.
Bingo.
That's it. Tuned in. Yeah. And then some.
Yep.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.